Hello, and welcome back to the No Sevens podcast. I'm your host, Silas, joined, as always, with David and Caleb.
Howdy.
What is up?
What's up, guys?
Hey, hey.
How's it going?
I might start saying howdy.
You should. It fits you well.
I watched Toy Story 1 and 2 recently, and A Bug's Life in between there. But Woody obviously is known for saying howdy.
Yeah. Really on a
G-rated. I also might start saying to there. Infinity and beyond.
It's wow. Really a
good catchphrase if you think about it.
All right. Well, along those lines, we are talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania today or tonight, whenever you're listening to this.
Day and night. Hopefully Day you're listening. Night. You've just been listening to this episode on repeat.
That's right.
That's what we're going for.
So good.
I have the movie details pulled up.
Hit us with them.
Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, awards one nomination. What were they nominated for?
Best film of the year?
Best music supervision for a trailer? Oh, wow.
That is such an obscure award nomination.
That's kind of... starring Paul Rudd, Michael Douglas, Evangeline Lilly, Michelle Pfeiffer, Jonathan Majors, Catherine Newton, Bill Murray. Spoiler alert. That's pretty much all the significant people.
You didn't even mention all the ants.
And all of the ants. Flick from Bug's Life.
How could you forget?
How could you forget the ants?
And who's the guy who plays...
the big face.
Oh, yeah.
who's the guy who plays, guy. What's his face? He's not even listed on here. What's that guy's name? MODOK?
MODOK or whatever.
Yeah. Let's not spoil it. He's in it. He's literally not even listed. Oh, I know. I understand why it's not listed. Okay.
Because it's a surprise.
Yeah. Caleb, you want to hit us? I don't know why I said me. Hit us with your non-spoiler review.
Yeah.
Or you can just hit me. You can spare some.
Yeah. Well, next time I see you, I'll be sure to hit you. I enjoyed it like I do most Marvel films as of late. As far as, it was entertaining, but no, not the best Marvel movie I've ever seen. So it'll probably be an under for me. Ant-Man is probably one of the heroes / characters in this universe that I know the least about. So it really does. It wasn't like connecting with me on a deeper level from a story perspective or anything like that. So it was really just like almost like an isolated action film that I'm going to see. And it was mediocre at best.
I am right there with you. I think it's going to be an under for me. I don't know if I saw... Is there one in between Ant-Man and the Wasp in this, or is this it?
No, it's Ant-Man and Wasp, and then Ant-Man and Wasp, okay. Quantumania.
Then I think I saw Ant-Man and Wasp. But this was pretty underwhelming to me. So,
I tend to agree. I think this is a harbinger of doom for the Marvel Cinematic Universe at this point in time. I'm going to go under.
Do you care to expound upon what that means for all the listeners that are like me?
Harbinger is like, I don't know what the exact definition of a harbinger is, but it's basically
like the forerunner.
It's a sign, a forerunner, a bad omen. It's like the herald of something coming, but like a bad thing, you know? It's a harbinger of doom.
So you think this is like the beginning of the end for the MCU?
We'll get into it.
Okay. All right. Gotta tease the audience within the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the whole thing in my non-spoiler review.
Sure.
Get your popcorn. All sit down.
Yeah, I'm about to pop off.
Listen up.
Okay, so spoilers?
Spoilers!
Spoilers. In 3, 2, One.
MODOK is MODOK. A giant head face thing.
Baby person.
Yeah.
maybe we should start with that. This is probably going to annoy some legitimate Marvel fans. But I thought they did MODOK about as well as MODOK could possibly be done.
I'm not familiar with how MODOK is in the comics, so give us that info.
I'm not familiar either. My understanding is that MODOK is... So, in this movie, the guy from Ant-Man 1, who's like the evil Jeff Bezos kind of guy, who is the villain, Ant-Man like sends him just infinitely shrinking, and he winds up in the quantum realm. And we find out that he survived and is down there when Ant-Man goes down there in this movie. And he has been totally transformed to just have a giant head and tiny limbs for some reason. When he shrank, that's how he turned out. And so he's like totally deformed, and he becomes, in the quantum zone, he becomes MODOK, the machine, mechanized organism designed only for killing?
Yes. Yeah.
So in the comics, MODOK is a completely different self-contained character. I believe he's also meant to be like a legitimate villain. Like.
Yeah. I'm looking him up now.
To be a serious threat. Not like S tier, but like probably at least like A or B.
Oh.
At least pretty like on par with like Doc Ock.
I didn't realize they actually did like the big head in the comics. I was not expecting that.
Well, I think that is why one of the controversies that I have heard is that they didn't really do MODOK. They just kind of sold him short and turned him into a joke. I think that if you're going to do a live action movie, and you have a character that you're trying to incorporate whose physical proportions are literally that he has a giant head with tiny little limbs sticking out, turning him into a joke is the best that you can possibly hope for, because there's just no way that he's going to be a serious villain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing I thought of was, I guess it's George Lopez's character from Spy Kids. I'm pretty sure that's...
I haven't watched that movie recently enough to know.
Yeah. I don't... Honestly, I don't even know that I've seen it, period. But I've seen enough of it to know that I think George Lopez has a giant face in Spy Kids. And he's like the villain. So that's all I could think about. But yeah, you're right, David. I think there's no serious way that this character could have been like...
It's just embarrassing. Even I feel like that whole like body proportion thing is just like a holdover from like, Golden Age or Silver? Like when like the 1960s, when you could just like have all these weird characters and it was like a thing because that's how comics were then. Like,
yeah,
I get that he's like a legacy character and stuff, but man, like that's a
why
hard
couldn't
one.
You do some kind of like modern adaptation of that instead of just sticking him with.
Well, because then you get into the same issue of like, oh, he's not comics accurate. Like, you're going to have to do something to make him not, like, significantly not comics accurate. And
I guess.
But also, like, his name is Mechanized Organism Designed Only for Killing. Like, that's kind of stupid. Like,
yeah, actually,
really,
I was wrong.
Ever going to be.
Whoa.
That
is like.
It's Shark Boy and Lava Girl. So I apologize. Not Spy Kids.
Okay.
But not too far of a stretch. But yeah, this was George Lopez, Mr. Electric from Sharkboy and Lava Girl.
Yeah, wow.
That
it's uncannily
exactly
similar.
Exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah. A giant head. I mean, this one's a little bit different, but pretty close.
It at least doesn't, it looks like it's completely a robot and not like tiny little arms.
Right. Yeah, he looks like a robot with
almost better.
Yeah. So. Anyway, hopefully some other listeners can relate to that sentiment, but that's what I was thinking during the movie.
Which, as a character, I found him pretty entertaining. Like, the whole thing where he, like, dies, he's like, at least I died at Avenger. I was like,
oh, yeah,
that's amusing. That's humorous.
Yeah. I mean, they did him okay. Yeah. Like, yeah, other than just the shock factor of, like, what he looks like, I guess at the end of the day, it's like, okay, he's tolerable.
tell you what, though, he had some horrible lines.
Oh, I know. It started to get to the point where it's just like, what are they doing?
I mean, so, I think it literally at one point, what was the guy's real name? Jason? Daryl? Darren?
Darren.
Yeah. At one point, he said, there is no Darren, there is only MODOK, which is like, are we riding for like a blockbuster Marvel Cinematic movie here? Or are we riding for like
this, Spy Kids.
Like, no, yeah, like, guys, like, this isn't the animated like Marvel TV show that comes on Saturday mornings for the 7-year-olds to watch. Like, I think we could do it. And at one point he said, like, he was like, couldn't have done it without your help. Thanks for that, by the way, which is like the most cliche villain line ever. Like 50% of all supervillains have said that line in some point. Come on. I was actually looking up the guy who wrote this movie, and he doesn't, I don't even, I mean, not to like bash this guy specifically, I won't name his name, but he doesn't have anything like any particularly strong writing credits to his name before this that would indicate like, hey, let's tap this guy to write this movie. So I don't know what happened there.
Hmm.
The director is the same director from the previous two animated movies, which I
it's
thought
also
strong
the director films. Of The Mandalorian.
Yeah, he has, I think, done some. Looks like he did two episodes.
Yeah,
because yeah, just interesting. TV shows never have all the same director, which is weird. You'd think that would just be consistent across the board.
True. Oh boy.
So that was one of the major flaws. You guys have any big things jump out to you guys? What do you guys think about the Bill Murray cameo?
I expected him to come back again. And then when he didn't, I was kind of surprised.
When is the last time we see Bill Murray? Is it just after he like turns him in?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it was pretty quick.
Didn't it seem though like he was the kind of character that they were gonna have like bring back?
It did seem like a bit of a missed opportunity. Now that you mention it,
I'm sure it was a hefty pay to bring him onto the movie too. So
I know it was a character that's kind of similar to the Grandmaster from Thor Ragnarok. Like,
oh yeah,
very similar vibe in terms of like casting in a role in the movie. I feel like.
Yeah. I didn't think much about it. I mean, I recognized who he was, but they did a pretty good job of like kind of misleading who the real bad guy was. Let me preface it with this. I don't like know any of the comics or anything. So every ounce of this movie is news to me. So like, I was like, oh, Bill Murray, he's the bad guy. You know, it's just like, that's how it kind of started. So they did a decent job of misleading the audience, maybe the ignorant audience members into that. But I thought he was good, cool. But that's my thoughts on it.
My major bone to pick with this is that it felt like 99% CGI.
Mm, yeah, it probably was.
Yeah.
Honestly. And you didn't like that.
I didn't like that. Because so many of the sets, it just felt like it was whatever that technology is that they use for the Mandalorian, where it's kind of like a half circle thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Green screening.
There's like a name for that.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. It's it like felt like that.
The ring or something like that.
And then so many of the characters, like MODOK and the little blob guy.
Oh, yeah.
Blue. So many of the like the smaller characters like that just were fill-ins.
Yeah.
Yeah, the blob guy, you're talking about the guy who got like shot full of holes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. He's
like obsessed with holes. There's actually on the soundtrack, the score album, the last song is him singing a song by himself. It's like a cappella.
Wow.
Holes.
All right.
It's kind of a funny song, but like, weird. I also thought that this was also weird to me. It was a very much like a weird writing cop out of like they're down there and there's this whole society down there, which that's also like another thing that's confusing. And so to get around the like how do all these people like understand each other, they just have the like drink this weird juice, which was like weird that they like went so far to like include that, but also it was like a weird work, like writing workaround to be like, how do they all speak the same language?
Yeah.
I thought that was quite odd.
I didn't think much about that. I mean, I did think it was funny after he drank the goo and everybody's just like, they're all friendly and the blob thing is actually like really funny. So should we talk about like things that we liked first? Maybe knock those out, or do you want to start with dislikes?
Let's start with things we liked.
Okay.
I'll say the score, solid. Christoph Beck, the guy who does the Ant-Man scores. And here's what I would actually say about this. In the world of movie scores, Ant-Man is actually one of the higher ranked ones for me. It's quite catchy. It's got a good, like some nice motifs and stuff. It's pretty unique, fun, has a lot of like diversity in terms of like the tone and the emotion that it covers. I thought the score, dude, did a great job. Didn't like outshine any of the previous scores by any means, but it was another just like solid entry. So it's on the Mega Soundtrack mix.
Interesting. It did not stand out to me.
Score, like, but like, you know, relative to the rest of the movie, it's good.
I got a question for you, David. Yeah. Do you make these observations while watching, or do you listen? I know you do listen to the soundtrack after the fact, but kind of like Silas said, maybe this is just a fault in the way I watch movies, but like typically the score doesn't like stand out to me while I'm watching. So I'm impressed that you're able to make these observations if you're kind of thinking this while you're watching, or do you do it after the fact as you listen to it?
It depends on the movie. So like, here's what I would say. Like there's like kind of like two different levels. There's the quality of the score as a standalone thing, which I do listen to because I listen to a lot of movie scores like while I work and stuff like that. So that's like kind of its own thing and is judged independently. Then there's like how well does the score like integrate into the movie itself. And sometimes you can have a bad score that integrates well into the movie. And like ideally you want to be in a place where like both are happening simultaneously, right? So like John Williams is a master at this, right? I mean, how many like iconic scores has he done, right? Of like Star Wars, super iconic, great to just listen to on its own, but also like you notice it very much when you're watching the movie and it's like an iconic theme.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Harry Potter, same thing with like Indiana Jones, right? Hans Zimmer does this also quite well. So there's like two different layers. This score, like, isn't really like a standout in terms of how it integrates in the movie, but in terms of like quality, like it's fine, decent, enjoyable.
That was a very good analysis. I appreciate that. A little peek into the mind of David.
Well, I'm actually, this is a side note. So I have this playlist called the Mega Soundtrack Mix that's just like all the movie scores. And I just listen to it while I work. And it's like, I recently crested 200 hours.
Whoa.
Of playtime. Wow. Of like how long the playlist is. And I'm getting pretty good at identifying scores by ear. Let me tell you, when you get to the point where you can identify not only the franchise, but the actual movie, when you can say, this is from Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, Crimes of Grindelwald, you're like,
yeah,
I am getting pretty good at this game.
Yeah, I don't know if that's impressive or kind of embarrassing. But
I'm the only person in the world that plays this game.
Well, hey, as another tangent.
There might be some other people.
Yeah. Well, this is perfect, David. As another tangent, I feel like you probably don't have TikTok. But
sure don't.
You could probably find us on YouTube or other places. There is a girl who has done a series of TikToks, and it's all about Guess That Score. Well,
oh, for real?
Yes. So she'll play a snippet of a score, and like she'll do three different rounds. And obviously, the sooner you guess the movie, the better you do. Because by the third, you know, by the third clue that she gives, it's typically the most iconic music from that film. So I think you could do really well.
You should link to that.
I'll have Caitlin do it because she's all over it. But yeah,
send it to me like a YouTube version.
Yeah, we'll look for it.
That's like literally the exact game that I'm playing
with yourself.
Yeah, like literally while I'm working, I'll just like periodically pause and be like, oh, this is from Transformers Dark of the Moon. Actually, I haven't got that very good knowledge of the Transformers scores, but like I'll just guess it. And like you gotta try and guess. The thing is, like, you can learn not only like the franchise, but you can also kind of infer it from like the I'm starting to be able to pick up like composers and like their different like styles,
signature, so like, stuff. Yeah. They do.
So like, this is actually a really interesting. Fun fact: Alan Silvestri is the guy who did, among other things, the Avengers scores, and he also did the G.I. Joe scores. And they're actually like, the G.I. Joe score is actually really good. And
yeah,
like,
I was gonna say. I actually remember some of the G.I. Joe scores.
And so sometimes I'll be listening to it, and I'll be like, "This is definitely Alan Silvestri. Like, is this like an Avengers thing?" And it's like, it's from G.I. Joe. And so, but you can kind of be, I can kind of be like, "This is Alan Silvestri. This is maybe Avengers, but possibly like a Captain America movie."
This is like a secret trivia skill.
It's really weird. Like my goal, so here's what I'm hoping will happen, is by the end of this year, I will be so good at identifying movie scores that I can use it as a genuine party trick and just be like, hey, like pick a random song from this playlist and I'll be able to tell you. And I want to be able to like go ahead, like grab some, you know, like how people are always like, hey, like in the Olympics, we should just have like some random dude swimming in one of the lanes just so you can see how like Olympians compare to like normal people. I want to do that. So just like, have some random person be like, hey, let's go head to head. And I'll be like, this
guess
is
the movie
from,
score.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. They'll be like, that is
cool. Oh my goodness.
And,
like, you know,
and ultimately the goal is to be able to name like franchise, actual film, the composer, and if I get really good, even the song title. But that's like tough. There's some songs that are really easy to identify and some that are not. And so
wow.
And this, ladies and gentlemen, tells you all you need to know about how fun David is at parties. He can't wait to eviscerate some punk on movie scores.
Yeah.
Watch out, everybody. And the crowd's going to go nuts. David's going to walk out of the room with women on his arms. Yeah, I can see it now.
That's accurate.
Oh, me. That's funny. Well, that was a good little segment. But what else did we like about the movie?
Let me look at my notes.
Well, for the listeners at home, in case you didn't do the math, David could listen to movie scores for 8 days straight and and not run out of music. So that's what your your 200 hours equates to eight and one third days. So
impressive.
Yeah. All right, Silas, what you got?
I liked the main villain.
Okay.
King, the Conqueror.
Yep.
Thought he was very serious and like pretty scary in terms of just like power and furiosity, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a word, but Yeah, I thought Jonathan Majors did really well in that role.
I'll go plus one to that.
Yeah, he was good. I agree with you. This speaks to my ignorance on movies and actors. I think it was one of the, maybe like Hayden or somebody after the movie was over, like, wow, Jonathan Majors is having a big year. You know, this movie, Creed, and they named off maybe another one. I was like, first of all, I have no idea who that is. And like, you know, the main bad guy. It's like, oh, I didn't realize he was going to be in Creed. But the more I've heard and the more I've seen, now that I do know that information, I'm like, yeah, he is having a big year.
I think he had his, whatever his breakout movie was, either came out this year or something.
What was his breakout movie? Was it Devotion?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he was in that too.
Is that what it was? I was thinking it was The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Oh, okay. That's 2019.
Okay.
I'm looking at his page right now.
Cool. I think that might have been actually Zach McPherson who mentioned that about, because he did see Devotion, which I didn't see that one, but I heard, you know, I saw trailers and stuff for it. But yeah, he was a good villain, and he was scary. Like,
right.
He wasn't afraid to do whatever. So, like, I think a lot of times these villains, you can kind of call their bluff on stuff, but like everything he said, I was like, oh, he's gonna do that. Like, he will kill whoever, do whatever. So, yeah.
And whenever him and Ant-Man were just like fist fighting it out, yeah, I was like, I think he's already training for Creed at this point.
Yeah, yeah. He was landing some good punches there. So,
this is a guy that we talked about last week as being super jacked.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree. I thought he was a really good villain. Very intimidating, cerebral, dangerous.
Even the outfit, I was like, that's very cool. And the whole little blue shield thing in his face.
Yeah.
Very nice.
In contrast to MODOK.
Yeah. True. I also liked the probability storm. I thought that was a very fun scene.
That was kind of fun. That was a fun scene now that you mention it.
Pretty unique, too.
He freaks out and then like helps himself. And it was like meta because he was like Ant-Man, but it was like he was an ant.
Yeah.
Like all
yeah.
Of, he was like his own ant colony. That was nice.
Great.
Yeah, that was a good one. I think I just started like grinning during that scene unconsciously, but. Or wait, subconsciously. I was conscious when I was doing it. I think overall, I really liked... I mean, Paul Rudd is hilarious. You know, I know that these are action movies, but at this point, there's a certain level of comedy you expect with Marvel movies. Maybe they overdid it a little bit, but I thought overall, like, the humor was pretty good. We've already talked about the little goo guy and... The opening scenes of, you know, were funny, had some good jokes and stuff. So, yeah. I mean, overall, I like the, like I said, I was entertained, but when you start to analyze some of the finer details, that's where it falls short.
Agreed.
Yeah, I thought it was humorous.
Okay. David, you mentioned, yeah, what do you liked? Anything else? Anything else that we liked about it?
I don't think there was for me. Oh, no, there's always like a Star Wars bar.
Oh, yeah.
There's always like a Star Wars bar.
I felt like the design of the Quantum Realm culture was very Star Wars derivative.
Yeah, that kind of bothered me, though.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I liked that Bill Murray made a cameo appearance. I thought that was like... Like, I knew when whatever that character was about to show up and they're about to reveal him, I was like, what actor did they get to play this character? Because it's going to be somebody that's like, and it was somebody like Bill Murray, right? But I knew it was going to be like somebody in that vein that's just kind of like an off the wall, like established actor, somebody who's not going to be cast to play like a major, major Marvel character, but somebody that you're just like maybe not quite going to expect. Mm-hmm. I thought Bill Murray was like, I was like, huh, that's funny that Bill Murray is this guy. So that was fun. That's my probably the last thing I liked about it.
All right. Well, let's move to the dislikes or things we didn't love about it.
Let's wreck this movie.
Tear it to shreds.
I just now thought of this when we were talking about the probability storm. Counterpoint to that, the random like getting saved by all of the ants at the end.
Yes.
What? I mean, it was cool. Like the whole like ant society thing, cool, but also
weird.
It was kind of like a reverse Phantom Menace trope.
Yeah.
I'll pretend like I know what that means.
Okay, well, like in the Phantom Menace, like how all of the droid army is like
like they just got
suddenly
turned
powered
off.
Down because they like blow up the like
Center.
There's like several other movies that have that trope of just like the army being like suddenly
disabled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was like the reverse of like you just suddenly have a massive army.
Right, right.
I guess it's the Lord of the Rings Army of the Dead trope.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that's...
I was thinking...
Go ahead, Silas.
Go ahead, Kill. Oh. I was thinking it would be a funny alternate ending if Hank became the evil ruler of the Quantum Realm with the ants as his like minion army.
Oh, that would actually be kind of funny. It was just like,
I'm going to be the king of the Quantum Realm. Yeah, I'm the ant lord.
I mean, what happens to the ants? Because they don't get to go home. They're just like, hey, we're going to rock and roll down here.
It seemed like they had become sentient, though, at least in terms of... They're like little scientist ants and stuff.
Oh, you know what else I thought was funny? Because this doesn't make any sense. Okay, so like, you know how they had like developed all of their like military tech and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
They had like giant like tanks, but they were like shaped like ants. Like they were like little ant walker like tank things. Did you guys see
those? Yeah.
I thought that's cool, but also so silly, right? Because if they're so technologically advanced, like why wouldn't they just build like normal war machine? Like why does
it be like us like making big robots that are just like people shaped?
Yeah, like what are the? I guess it's like the equivalent of like what are those like kaiju? It's not like. The kaiju are the thing. You know what I'm talking about? Like the Pacific Rim and they've got
Yes. Yeah.
There's a name for those. Like, was it like a Jaeger or something like that? Anyway.
Over my head.
It'd be like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I was like, why does it need to be shaped like an ant? Why can't it just be like a tank? Or
all they know are ants.
That's it.
There's like, let's just make a bigger metal version of us.
Yeah.
Like, we're like so great. Yeah.
It's a Megazord, but it's just ants.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I just thought that was so funny that like, there's hammering that ant thing.
I didn't really think hard. About it that far. Yeah. That's funny.
It was, yeah, that piece, I kind of forgot about that detail, but that was one thing that kind of made me a little annoyed. Not only the fact that, you know, all the ants came back to save the day, which, good for them, but I was like, why didn't they finish the job? They drug Kang off, and you know, by all indication, they had like taken care of him. But then he shows back up, you know, slightly beaten up and tattered and stuff. But it's like, guys, just finish him. Like, pull him apart. Do whatever. Why didn't you guys finish the job? They just ran off and then still let him live. So I was a little aggravated by that, and I think. If I'm thinking about this correctly, I was really hoping for like, I don't know, maybe this is a little too brutal, but like, I really like when a villain in a movie gets what they deserve and is just like, just murdered so bad. But I feel like that never happened for me. And so I was a little disappointed. You know, it just gets to the point where you're so angry at how bad this person is. It's just like, I want to see him ripped limb from limb, but that didn't happen.
By the ants.
Yes, that would have been, I mean, ideal, but...
Ant-Man's probably not the movie where you're going
to
see that.
Yeah, so maybe I need to throttle it back. I'm a little bloodthirsty.
He, need, He just needed to come back so that he could force Ant-Man to choose to stay behind.
But then it was like no big deal, like instantly.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It was just like, okay, we stayed behind, and then they opened the portal right back up. It's like, this was not even, there was no stakes in what she did.
No problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I also went to go see this with our good friend David Vincent, and he was like, so why, if the portal gets open on both ends, why didn't Kang just go through the portal the first time?
When they opened it?
Instead of like sucking them all down there, why didn't he just go through?
That's a good point.
Because the only reason he needed them down there was to get the thing so that he could, get out of there. So
that's a good point.
And here's the other thing. Okay, this kind of where we get into like a lot of the problems with this movie are just like weird blatant plot holes.
That's kind of where I was going to.
Like, you're telling me this dude has all this technology and he's been down here for ages, but he cannot figure out something that Hank Pym figured out in a military lab in the 1970s?
Hank, dude, he's just built different.
That seems a little bit implausible.
Yeah. I'll tell you what's even more implausible than that. Not actually, but... what's his face? Paul Rudd's character. I don't even know his name.
Scott Lang.
Yeah. So Scott's daughter, you know, she's doing her own thing. She's working on this. You're telling me that she's been working on this for who knows how long? And her... That's not really her grandparents, right? That's...
I guess they're...
Like... I don't
they're
know.
Not related.
I mean, not literally.
Yeah, they're not related.
They're her stepmom's parents.
Okay, yeah. So for lack of a better term.
Step-grandparents.
Yeah, step-grandparents. But she's been working on this little project, that little thing that got them into this whole situation to begin with. For weeks, I would assume, at least. And everything's hunky-dory. Everything's just fine. And then it just so happens when they're all in the room and they're looking at it, and then the grandma says something like, wait, what? You built a... portal to the quantum realm? Oh no. And then it just so happens to suck them in. I'm like, I don't know. It's just like
the timing of
the timing of everything. I'm like, she's been rocking and rolling on this, and now is when it decides to malfunction. I was like, I don't know. Seems like a little weak to me, but
it's a good point.
But they, you know, I guess at the end of the day, Marvel or Disney, whoever, they have to find a way to get them down there. So I try to suspend, you know, the suspension of disbelief. You just kind of have to roll with it. But there were some things, like you said, it's just like the solution or the problem was just, it seemed to be a little too easy.
I was curious too, because they were down there for X amount of time. Wasn't the same thing, didn't the mother or the grandmother, I guess at this point, didn't she go down there for X amount of time and then come back and it was like years and years and years in the future? And the same with Ant-Man. Like, he missed all of his daughter's childhood, right?
I can't speak to that. I have no idea.
It's really unclear how time works in the quantum realm.
Yeah, so I was wondering why, like, did time change at all? Like, are all the Avengers, like, old now that they came when they came back?
Evidently not.
Seems like an inconsistency to me.
That does seem like an inconsistency. Here's another thing with the quantum realm. Number one. I thought the quantum realm was the smallest you could go. But apparently when you're in the quantum realm, you can still shrink even smaller. What's the deal with that? Secondly, how come, how come Cassie always has to like size back up when she punches somebody? You don't have to do that. It's very well established in the first Ant-Man movie that while you shrink down, you retain your mass, so you're able to apply the amount of force you would be able to as your normal size. But since you're much smaller, you're denser, and so that force is concentrated, turning you into like a bullet type of deal. But she keeps sizing up.
Scott just has to have something to teach her.
But it's not even how his it completely changes the way his powers work. That was annoying.
Yeah.
But also, here's the other thing. If the quantum realm is like this tiny, 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 like subatomic realm, how come no matter where you shrink from, you always end up there like this, like I was imagining the quantum realm was like a Horton Hears a Who type of scenario,
where all like, over the place. There's
yeah,
just...
like anywhere you shrink down, you're in like the quantum realm there. But like quantum realm is necessarily much more expansive than the normal realm because like it's like tiny, and so there's like way more space to be, like. But apparently, no matter where you shrink down from, you always end up in the quantum realm, which is relatively finite, and you're basically going to run into the same people when you yeah. were there. Even the last time you shrank down, you were somewhere miles over the ocean away. On top of a nuclear warhead. Apparently, you just shrink down from inside your basement, and you run into Bill Murray again. What's the deal with that? That doesn't make any sense.
That's a good point.
So,
and also they just shrunk down Kang the Conqueror. Like that was how they like finally got rid of him, right?
Yeah, they did. They like shrank him down.
Why is that always what happens to the villains? Like that's what happened to MODOK.
Yeah.
But in like real world, he just got shrunk.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I want a definitive death.
Yeah. And need to be torn apart by ants. Yeah.
And because. Well, I guess the post-credit scenes kind of revealed it anyway, right? That Kang will return or whatever. Yeah. It's like
there's like a bunch of him.
Yeah, because they did not show the death. It's like I will never believe it, and that's yeah. like I guess how they want it to be. But it's like unless I see it, I don't believe it.
Here's the thing, though. I think that Kang is dead, but there's
just more of him.
Infinite like universe Kangs, and they're all. So like, and
this didn't he say he was trying to stop himself?
Yes. And this is the thing. This gets into why I think this is the harbinger of doom for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's because they're leaning farther and farther into the multiverse thing, which I have been talking about being problematic for since Spider-Man No Way Home. Is that the right one?
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking about being problematic for years. A, it's going to lead to lazy writing, which is already happening. But B, it's just getting too complicated. I don't know who I'm supposed to root for anymore.
It
like,
is.
There's these weird ethics around like killing like offshoots of the multiverse versus like preserving the sacred timeline. I don't know which one is supposed to be the morally like ethical choice. Like back when Thanos was the big bad, it was very clear. Every time he gets an Infinity Stone, that's bad. He wants to get rid of 50% of all life. That's bad. Defeat that guy. But now it's like some Kangs like want to preserve the sacred timeline, and some Kangs want to have all of the variants. And it's like, okay, I don't even know who to root for. Like, I don't really understand what's going on. There's like all this multiverse stuff. Like, it's too much to keep track of as we're trying to like do all of this like cross-pollination of like films. And I just think that this is just going to lead to systemic problems in this next phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe's story arcs.
Boy, just and imagine.
Storm clouds are approaching.
Just imagine how hard this is going to be to explain to our children.
I know.
The moral dilemmas. I mean, it doesn't take much to confuse me. Y'all know that. So, like, that's almost why I've just started approaching these as, like, isolated movies. And I'm like, it'll all work itself out in the end. It'll shake through another, you know, Avengers movie or something. And
yeah,
I'll just rely on Andrew Merritt to tell me what happened.
To be clear, I don't think the financial viability of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is in any danger whatsoever.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I thought was thinking about this. They've been making Fast and Furious movies for like 20 years.
There's another one.
And they're coming out with like part one of the last movie.
Finally. That's funny.
Right? And it's kind of like, man, if they can do that with like Fast and Furious, like they can definitely like run the MCU started in like 2008. They got at least another 15 years in them, at least bare minimum. because they'll just keep making these movies until they are not profitable anymore, and then they'll reboot and start over. But here's the thing, it's like
dark picture.
It used to be like a really, they used to be good. They used to be pretty good. And those days are gone.
I miss the old Marvel.
I miss the old Marvel too.
Yeah.
This movie made me nostalgic and, but in like a sad way. There's a kind of a word for that. Melancholy. For like back in the day.
Reminiscent.
Yeah. When it was like, you know, just the golden age.
Yeah.
That made me think about more in general about how great the 2010s were.
Yeah. But that's for another podcast. So
that's for another podcast.
And like we just plug a random like, hey, tune into our other podcast where we host the 2010s. Oh, me. Yeah. I agree, but I don't know of any other specific things I didn't really like about the movie. It wasn't the worst, wasn't the best, so that's...
I didn't like that it wasn't the best. I didn't like that this is an acceptable entry, right? Like, I want better, I want higher standards, I want better writing, I want more, because they're capable of more.
Well, given the scale of this podcast and how many listeners we have, your voice will make a difference, David.
Some serious changes coming.
When the Disney executives get a hold of this, oh boy.
I'm not trying to affect change here. I know. Process my emotions.
Yeah.
Project it onto our listeners.
But at least it was better than Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
That's not much of an achievement.
So
never saw it.
Yeah. And even maybe the new Thor movie. Would you rank it better than that one?
I would put it about on par with the new Thor movie. Okay. Same ballpark. But not as good as the new Black Panther movie.
Oh. We didn't even...
I thought we didn't review it. I watched it much later after it came out, but I was like, it was decent.
Yeah, yeah. All right, anything else before we get into the final reviews or the actual rankings?
No.
It's about all I had.
Okay, well, David, you want to go first?
Yeah, it's going to be probably like a 5 for me.
Okay, not bad. Silas?
Given the lack of rewatchability, it's probably like a 4 for me.
Whoa.
I probably would not watch this again. Yeah, there's just no point.
Well, being the optimist that I am, I'll give my rating at a 6, which is kind of where I had, you know, settled before. So that's an average of a 5 though for the three of us. So yeah, take that for what it's worth.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Middle of the road, subpar.
Yeah, yeah. But not a 7.
No,
could
sense.
Never be a 7. All right.
Silas, you got any trivia for us?
I didn't even look at the trivia.
Well, I realized last time that we completely departed from our old formula, and that trivia was like a segment that we used to do that we just like totally ignored last time.
Well, we were just throwing it in there. But trivia, Bill Murray was interested in joining Marvel for a while. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's really not even that good of trivia.
This is the first Ant-Man movie not co-written by Paul Rudd.
Well, there's your problem.
Yeah. I did think it was, this is not trivia, but Silas, you're probably looking at it too. They talked about how the jaw muscle, which is the masseter, you guys are familiar, thanks to Jaws or size, is the strongest muscle in the human body. So that fact that they were able to pry Scott's mouth open to make him drink the goo or whatever is like totally impossible. But I think that's the least of our plot hole concerns.
Okay, this one says...
I don't know if that's true. That can't be true.
Listen, take it up with IMDb.
Well, what about Indiana Jones at the Temple of Doom? They got his mouth open.
There's no possibility for someone to hold someone else's mouth open forcibly as it is happening when Ant-Man drinks the red liquid. I don't remember exactly how that scene went.
Were they just like holding his head and then his jaw?
Yeah, to do that? Maybe.
That probably, yeah.
I'm skeptical of that. Well, I feel like also you just plug their nose.
Next time, we'll try it out on you, David.
Hey, I have particularly strong
masseters. So. Yeah.
Apparently, they were trying to introduce MODOK for a while, and they were just like kept postponing it. And then this guy was realized that he could use him as that to explain how King knew about the Pyms and the Langs. Which is kind of like a lame way to.
Yeah, that also feels problematic.
Yeah.
Because it's like, hey, we got this character. We need to introduce him at some point. And then he's like, I can shoehorn him in as this comical villain to solve a plot point. That's just not how you should approach your writing. Maybe hire people who have writing experience, guys. That's maybe a.
Here's a novel idea: hire better people.
It was shipped to cinemas under the pseudonym Dust Bunnies or Dust Bunny. Sorry.
Interesting.
That's funny.
Nobody would have got that one.
That's about all that's really interesting.
All right. Well, this has been a review of Ant-Man. And oh, you know what else I liked about this movie that I forgot to mention?
Throw it in here.
End title credit scene where it says Ant-Man and then it fills in Quantumania and it like works out because of how like the word Ant-Man is in Quantumania.
Mm.
I thought that's pretty cool. That was like my favorite part of the movie.
Solid graphic design.
Yeah, it was. It was nice. It was a nice animation there.
Sweet. Did we already decide what our next movie was?
Yeah.
Yes.
Remind me.
I actually have. Okay, so.
And the listeners.
We're going to do All Quiet on the Western Front in honor of the Oscars.
That's right.
But also Creed 3 came out this weekend. I really want us to review
it. Yes. I plan to see it regardless. So, yeah, we should review it.
Yes.
So I think All Quiet on the Western Front will be probably released first in terms of episodes. But I've already watched that movie. I don't know if you all have. But.
No, I have not. But well, yeah, I'll probably need to watch it the night before we record because I got a terrible memory and I am not good at taking notes. So. Oh boy.
Just say that.
All right. So, All Quiet on the Western Front.
Followed by Creed 3.
All right. Any final thoughts?
Nope.
All right. Yep. Thanks for listening. We will talk to y'all in the next one. Peace.